And good morning. It's good to be with you this Saturday morning. You know, I remember one day, it had to have been a Saturday, we drove to a Menards grocery store in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And if I'm not mistaken, I was just trying to think, was that like over either near White Rock Lake or the Casalinda area? Nobody probably knows that there used to be like a small movie theater over Casalinda. But anyway, we lived in Mesquite, and my father was a butcher over at the Menards food store. I remember one time I could look at him doing some of his work. He was dressed up in white. He had like the type of white hat that you would wear if you worked at a bakery, like Mrs. Baird's. I've actually met Mrs. Baird's before. Anyway, we used to go there and buy loaves of bread when the delivery driver couldn't make enough, because we had a grocery store when I was growing up, and there was like a little deli department. There was like a butchering shop. My dad always liked cutting up meat, but I remember looking at some of the bandsaws and the pieces of equipment they would use to make cuts of meat. Well, I thought it was normal. Everybody, when they would buy a roast to cook on Sunday, well, the roast just wasn't meat by itself. Oh, no. There was either a bone of some kind through it, whether it was an arm or a shoulder roast. But anyway, my earliest memories of having meat were always bones attached to it. So you know what happens when there's like a Sunday roast. Whatever's left over is still attached to the bone. You know, usually baked in a Dutch oven, something like that. Well, when the roast comes out, you know, they let it cool down a little bit, but it's ready to go. And when you put the leftovers directly into the refrigerator, well, you know what you're going to see next. If you were to pull it out later in the day, like that evening, to make like a roast beef sandwich or to have some more, you would notice this kind of a white, waxy substance that would build up around the roast. And, you know, you'd figure it out, okay, that was fat. And, of course, you know, everybody has their own beliefs on that. Some people cook bacon, they save the grease to fry their eggs in, or they'll make gravy from it. This is nothing new. People have been doing that for a long time. A long time. But you would also notice when you'd pull the roast out to make yourself a sandwich, there would be this clear jelly-like substance. Well, that's what I would call gelatin. And so that's not actually a gross substance at all. But I want to read to you just a little bit this morning about gelatin. And I get this first piece from Dr. Godhoffer. That's G-O-T-T-H-O-F-F-E-R. He's written a book called Gelatin in Nutrition and Medicine. So let's just let this be a starting point. And as you listen to this, just kind of listen with and keep an open mind, and just think about the condition of your skin and your bones and your joints. Think about the inner skin of your body, which is your mouth and your inside your nose and your sinuses, the back of your throat, your esophagus, all the way down to the stomach. And just think for just a moment. How many people have horrible digestive issues that they can't seem to resolve? The body just can't quite seem to heal. And you know as well as I do, all these things tend to become worse with age. You can bet your bottom dollar that if you have 24/7 pain and suffering, if you never feel good, well, then the writing is on the wall. Your body is completely and totally exhausted. It's exhausting at trying to heal. It's trying to heal, but it can never get over the hump. Wouldn't it be nice to wake up one day and feel really, really good? And you go, oh my goodness, I think the past is behind me. I don't have to deal with it anymore. Thank the good Lord for the blessings of good health. Well, our food has radically changed. We don't order meat by and large that has bones attached to it. But let me have a go at this morning. I want to read this from Dr. Godhoffer from the book Gelatin and Nutrition and Medicine. And again, I'm talking about gelatin here. And gelatin, yeah, it's found in plants, but it's found in meat also. The beginnings of gelatin therapy are buried in antiquity. Reference to its use as a hemostatic agent in China in the first century is found in the writings of San Han Ron, 204 AD, stating that gelatin has been used as a hemostatic agent in China and Japan from prehistoric times. Homburger also referred to its use in China and Japan during the first century for stopping nose bleeding by inhaling the powdered form of gelatin. Well, isn't that interesting? And also, it was used for the bleeding of the stomach. Well, I don't know about you, but how many people have bleeding conditions where they just can't put a stop to it? Well, pretty bad. So they even use this if somebody had bleeding from the intestines or they had bleeding from the rectum, whether it's hemorrhoids or not. They used gelatin, and it worked. In the year 1759, a report was made by an anonymous writer in Nuremberg on the use of gelatin in the case of very bad dysentery. Dysentery would be severe projectile diarrhea on steroids. It's all bad. People die from that stuff. They become dehydrated, and that's the end of it. So, at the same time, indicating that gelatin had been employed for a long time as a source of nourishment for weak patients. Now, when I read that, I'm thinking, okay, how many people right now feel as if they're weak and they can't recover? Hey, and this could be, you could be 25 years of age, but you could also be 85 years of age. And maybe you've had a really big setback when it comes to your health. Maybe you've had a stroke. Maybe there's been a heart attack or a cancer. Well, I like the idea that it was used for hundreds of years, the use of adding gelatin to either our soups or to our food to try to take a weak person and help them regain their vitality. I know you know this, but you cannot restore vitality with the use of synthetic nutrients. It can't be done. It's impossible, as a matter of fact. What are you going to put in your body that has vital life force? Well, it's going to have to come from a living substance. And so the idea of a T-bone steak for lunch may not appeal to you, but you got plenty of gelatin that, you know, some people actually like eating the marrow. I think it's good. So a gentleman by the name of Bischoff in the year 1805, he referred to the use of gelatin when people have wasting diseases. This is when people have chronic diarrhea. You know, sometimes people have diarrhea just from being continually under the gun, under stress. It never ends. You can't do that forever. Every person is going to break down if that keeps going on. Okay. Who's heard of the name of Dr. Francis F. Pottinger? No, Francis M. Pottinger is the correct name. He's got some of the most interesting writings I've ever read about before. But I remember being shown the little movie of him and his cats. That is an eye-opener. If you want to look up something, look up Pottinger's Cats on YouTube and see what you think about that little 10 or 12-minute video. Okay, this comes from Dr. Francis Pottinger Jr., M.D., He's written a book called The Hydrophilic Colloid Diet, or made a comment on it. Let me just read what he says. If a man did not cook his food, there would be no need for the addition of any hydrophilic colloid to his diet. He's talking about gelatin. Uncooked foods contain sufficient hydrophilic colloids to keep the gastric mucosa. To keep the gastric mucosa in excellent condition. As we live largely on cooked foods, well, guess what's going to happen? Problems are going to arise. which I know you're smart. You're thinking, well, what can I eat that's raw? Good call. An old description of the stomach contents portrays them in layers, each layer assuming its position by virtue of its specific gravity. Meat first, then vegetables and fruits, and finally the water layer with its fat. According to this view, these layers churn around in sufficient gastric juices to digest the meal in 1.5 hours to up to 4 hours if all goes well. If these gastric contents are then removed and examined, the aqueous layer is strongly acid. Though the degree of the acidity differs with the individual, if we add a hydrophilic colloid of excellent hydration capacity to the diet portrayed above, that's gelatin, a definite change takes place in the stomach contents. If they are withdrawn for analysis, a gluey mass is recovered. It is not sour as the stomach contents without the gelatin. It does not show any acidity in that the colloid is broken down. Under these conditions, digestion is generally distributed throughout the mass rather than layered. Now, I don't know if that means anything to you, but you got to have gelatin if you want to heal a stomach that's upset. Do you know of anybody that's taken acid-blocking drugs for their stomach? Okay. Well, then pay attention to this right here. This comes from Dr. Gotthoffer also. He goes on to say, the value of gelatin in the treatment of disease of the digestive system has long been recognized. You know what? This is all we're talking about. What takes place in the gut? That's either going to make you or break you. A gentleman by the name of Uffelman in the year 1891 referred to the use of gelatin in certain cases of gastric catarrh, especially when someone has hyperacidity. I know you know this, but there's only about 20 million people, probably in Texas alone, that are using acid-blocking drugs to deal with this very problem. Okay? A doctor by the name of Wheel, Lumiere, and Pihu, they found by direct clinical practice that gelatin acted better and more rapidly than bismuth and tannin, that's Pepto-Bismol, for remedying infant diarrhea. This sounds like a pretty simple solution to me. Have you ever seen them make gelatin before? A lot of times they cook it out of the skins of animals. Or have you ever heard of bone broth before? It's got to be one of the greatest substances that you can put in your body is broth. So good for you. Okay, these workers believe that gelatin acted to cause a mechanical neutralization of intestinal poisons, so they use this to treat dysentery and diarrhea and upset stomach. Dr. Mann was impressed with the value of gelatin in the cure of colitis. When have you heard a gastroenterologist say, okay, you've got diverticulosis, you've got diverticulitis, you've got Crohn's disease, you have inflammatory colitis, we're going to recommend gelatin. The thing of it is, sometimes this stuff works so fast, it makes your head spin at how wonderful the remedy is that heals your body. A doctor by the name of Hertzberg pointed out that he had employed gelatin in the simple form of a concentrated calf's foot broth with excellent results in the diuretic condition of children and adults in cases of abdominal typhus and dysentery. I don't think that I've read in the paper anyone has died of typhus this week in Jacksonville. Anyway, if you want to join me on the radio, please feel free. The number is 903-586-5257. Until somebody calls, oh, here we go. Let's go ahead and go to the phone lines. Let's see what's going on. Alrighty, good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, how are you?
I'm great, how are you doing?
Well, I've got something going on in my right hip I'd like to get rid of.
Well, what is it?
Well, I originally slipped in my backyard in some pine needles and fell on my tailbone.
Oh no.
And a couple of days later, I started having like sciatica in that hip. But it's radiating around down into my groin, and I'm having a really difficult time getting up and down and and it's very sore when I walk.
Now, when you say sciatica, you don't mean it's going down your leg, do you?
It's not going down my leg. It's okay. Going around my hip into my groin.
That's not sciatica.
Mm-hmm.
There's a nerve in your lower back. It's called the recurrent meningeal nerve.
Mm-hmm.
But it innervates the fourth and fifth lumbar facet joints. And so when those get jammed, have you ever had a jammed finger before?
Yes.
Well, that's what you've done when you slipped and you've on the pine needles. I love pine needles, but not this time. But when you slipped and fell, you jammed those facet joints, and it's got that recurrent meningeal nerve. And so if you were a man, it would be in one of your testicles. I'm not trying to be crude, but the pain is so severe they think there's something wrong. But it's just that pinched nerve in the lower facet joint. And so what happens is when they get pinched, it wraps around from the back of the hip or the lower back around the front, but it just concentrates right there in the groin area. That's where this pain distribution ends up. But most likely, that's what you've done. You've slipped and fell, and you've jammed those facet joints, and now you just need to unjam them. So if you go to a chiropractor, there's a simple procedure called the Smith-Canadian maneuver, or at least that's the way I was taught. But the Smith-Canadian maneuver is a lateral push on that facet joint to open it up. And so you'll unwedge that little fold of cartilage that's jammed in place, thus relieving the pressure on the recurrent meningeal nerve.
Okay, I've been to the chiropractor 3 times.
That's why I told you it's called the Smith-Canadian maneuver.
Okay, let me write that down. Smith?
Smith as in Dr. Smith.
Oh, Dr. Smith.
Well,
okay.
it's not Dr. Smith. It's just called the Smith.
The Smith, okay.
The Smith-Canadian maneuver. I really have
Smith
no
Canadian
idea.
Smith-Canadian maneuver.
Yeah, I have no idea how it got that name. But it's a lateral technique to open up those facet joints. Thus, it's almost like, here's what you got. You know what a doorstop is, don't you?
Yes.
A little rubber wedge, and you just put it in place to make sure that when you have your attic fan on later today, it doesn't slam the door shut from the breeze. But if you put it, so your doorstop is wedged in your lower back right now. You got to unwedge it. And so this is the one technique that I've seen work over and over. It's called the Smith-Canadian maneuver.
Okay.
And so it's either that or you have to have two horses tie ropes to your hands and your feet and try to pull you apart.
Well, that's what it feels like I need. I feel like somebody needs to pull my leg.
Well, that's exactly it. And you know what? That can work too.
Yeah.
If you had somebody hold your arms and somebody pull on one of your legs while you're laying down, that might do it also. That can actually unwedge that doorstop. It's like a little piece of fold of... I hate to say cartilage, but let me say like ligament or whatever surrounds the joint capsule. It just gets wedged in there. And so, yeah, that's, you got two friends? Maybe they can pull your leg and get it to unwedge.
Well, I've tried soaks and
Oh, I know,
ice.
This is mad. I mean, you might try rubbing some lemon juice over the area.
Yeah, I've been doing that too. Lemon juice and olive oil,
but you're gonna have to you're gonna have to pull that jammed doorstop or wedge out of that facet joint. That's really the only way.
Okay. Do you still do chiropractic? I know you're doing this wellness stuff. I didn't think you did chiropractic.
I really don't. I mean, only for my patients that come to me for other reasons. But no, I don't really take chiropractic patients anymore.
But
if you were a patient of mine, I would do it for you. But okay, so you got.
I have been at one time.
Well,
does that count?
Well, here's. I'm not a Medicare provider, so I can't legally do it if someone has Medicare.
Oh.
Anyway, I could do it for free, but you know, I could do that for free all day long too. Okay.
Okay.
This is what you got to do: go to a chiropractor, have them pull that facet joint back in place, unwedge the fold of tissue. And this pain will go away. It's instantaneous. But they may have to use what's called the Smith-Canadian maneuver. There's another technique called flexion distraction that I've seen work before. But I've also seen just pulling on the leg firmly to unwedge the jammed piece of tissue. It's really as simple as that. So I don't wish this on you. It just, you know, but we got to just run toward. What are we going to do to deal with it? to get you to a better place, right?
Yeah, because this has been going on for a couple of weeks.
Oh, my goodness. That's no fun.
I've even had two massages.
Well, and the massage can't unwedge the tissue. I love massages. Go get a third one. That's fine. But it's not going to unwedge the tissue. But if you had somebody, if you laid on your back and somebody held your arms above your head, while another very, very brave individual pulled long ways and unwedged the tissue, that would do it. That potentially could do it right there. I had this gentleman come to see me, just utterly fabulous. He's a constable. And he was telling me about injuring his knee. And, you know, I can't tell him what I'm fixing to do. But I said, okay, your lateral meniscus, the cartilage between your femur and your tibia, is pushed forward. And you could just feel it. It was very tender. And so I just had him hold his upper body, distracting it from his lower body, as I sort of just popped the cartilage back in place. But he got up and said, hey, that feels like a new man. But you could see the look in his eye, the fear and the terror of somebody, like, yanking that leg hard. But if I told him what I was going to do, he'd never let me do it. So, anyway, sometimes you have to sneak up on people. But if somebody could do that to you, that would probably go a long way to really, really helping your situation.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. I wish you the best.
Okay. Thank you. Happy 4th of July.
Oh, you too. Thanks a bunch. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, there's a phone line open again. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. That's 903-586-5257. Well, thank you very much for your phone call. Welcome to the program.
Yes, a couple of questions, Dr. Morgan. First, you just mentioned, like, when the roast went to the fridge and the white thing on top. What did you say is done with that?
Well, I was talking about when you cool down a roast that has a bone attached to it, you're going to have you're going to have gelatin that you see that comes out. It's kind of like a clear, gunky jelly-looking stuff.
Yeah. I had done this, and usually the white is like the solid fat.
Exactly, yeah, that's it.
So I usually throw that away because I think that is the bad fat. But I don't want you to. Oh, okay, what am I supposed to? So that's the bad fat?
And, you know, my thought was this morning when I was reading that in the air, I said, I hope somebody can put, you know, this equation together, 2 + 2 = 4, and what that means is if somebody has horrible stomach problems or they can't heal, this might be an application for trying to put gelatin back into the human body so it can do its job.
Okay. Because after the thing underneath, it's kind of like a gelatin. So I thought this is the broth and the gelatin. So that's what I kept. The other I thought was the saturated fat. Oh, that is not good for you. So I just threw it away. So. I guess it's good for you. It's good fat. It's kind of like coconut oil.
Yes, ma'am, it is. And I know that's a really bizarre concept for people, that how could something like butter that's solid at room temperature, or coconut oil, or the fat that comes from an animal, how could that be good for you? But that's the very thing that your body's made of.
Yeah. Well, I should know that because I use coconut oil and I use real butter. So, but anyhow, some reason.
I know this is going to be simplistic when I say this, but if a person doesn't get enough saturated fats, what are they going to put in their body instead? It's always one thing. It's sugar. So could you imagine if you woke up in the morning and your husband cooks you like an award-winning, you know, omelet? Probably happens all the time with you, but anyway. But if he cooks you an omelet and he says, sweetheart, I made this with butter. I made this with 3 eggs. I even grilled the onions and put spinach and mushrooms and crumbled up uncured bacon in it. Well, what happens is when you eat that with all that saturated fat, it tends to greatly satiate your appetite. You tend to be really satisfied. Now, the way that my mother would say this, she would say, Roy, you want to eat an omelet because it sticks to your bones. And you know what she means by that. She means it stays with you. But if you woke up in the morning and didn't have that good fat and protein, you would be craving carbohydrates like there's no tomorrow after that first donut. Mm-hmm. So even though you eat a donut and you go, oh, this is great, I love it, I feel like $1 million, Well, you're not an hour later. It's going to come crashing down, and you're going to want something else to give you like a quick nutritional fix.
Yes. So a second question is, have you heard of a product called colostrum to take supposedly to rebuild the inside of your gut?
Yes, ma'am. I mean, all jokes aside, colostrum is the very first substance that comes from a woman's breast when she gives birth to a baby.
Yes.
And so I always think, well, why did God do it that way, where colostrum is the first thing that comes out? Well, evidently, he knows exactly what he's doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so colostrum absolutely is one of the greatest substances on the planet to help rebuild the lining of the gut.
Okay. Yes. All right, great. That's another. I heard that from another friend, and I got some, so I wanted to hear your opinion. And so I'm going to try to be quick here. The next question is, you mentioned in the past, when somebody wakes up, usually around 3 or 4 in the morning, there's something that's kind of going off that is, you're supposed to sleep through the night.
Exactly. So like if somebody wakes up, let's just say between 12 midnight and 2 o'clock in the morning, I started thinking, okay, that clearly represents the liver is under stress. If somebody tells me they wake up every hour on the hour throughout the night, well, that ain't rocket science. That's usually something's affecting the urinary tract. And so if somebody wants to get up to urinate like a dozen times a night, that's just a recipe for disaster. So what we should do is go, okay, what's behind that? Well, it's the kidneys. Let's figure it out. But if somebody wakes up wide awake at 3 o'clock in the morning and they're awake for at least an hour, that's almost always some type of inappropriate surge of either adrenaline or cortisol at 3 or 4 in the morning. So you kind of look at what are called the adrenal glands.
Mm-hmm.
And when the adrenal glands are out of balance, it's maybe pretty common to wake up wide awake at 3 o'clock. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes.
Okay. Can I go off on a tangent just for a little bit, please?
Go for it.
All right. There is a hormone that the body produces called adrenaline. We got to have it. If you walk into the forest later today and you see a pack of wolves is starting to chase you, you might want a little bit of adrenaline so you can climb a tree and get away from them, right? But once the danger's over, adrenaline goes away and kind of calms down and you get back to like a calm state of being. The other chemical that I probably deal with just about every single day in my office is one called cortisol. Cortisol, as we age, tends to increase. It tends to go up. We tend to have more of it. And I know you're going, well, that doesn't make sense. You would think everything else goes down. Why should that go up?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that as human beings, we're the sum total of all the separate, unique events of stress that we've had. And I'm not going to ask you how much stress you have had in your life or how many events have been really harmful, but you're a human being. Every single human that lives on the earth is going to have an occasion to suffer a little bit or experience pain, right?
Right.
And so as we age, we tend to have one surge of cortisol upon the other till the time that we're getting a little bit older in years. We just easily secrete and pump out cortisol. Too easily. And cortisol doesn't do you any favors. It breaks down all the organs and converts them into sugar. So technically, you don't even have to eat sugar to have diabetes. All you got to have is cortisol. Because cortisol, if there's too much of it, it'll start breaking down the valuable muscular system and converting it directly into sugar. And so if a person says, but Dr. Morgan, I don't eat any junk food. I don't eat grains. I don't eat sugar, but my sugar's always high. Well, that's what cortisol does. And cortisol starts to break down and rip apart the bones. So technically, that's all a woman has to have is to have bone loss, is just have too much cortisol. Now, in saying that, one solution that I want to remind you of and everybody else and myself, the human body just requires a optimal intake of what's called magnesium.
Mm-hmm.
It is a mineral that is so critically important, but without magnesium, you can't properly regulate cortisol. Now, I could say everything in reverse. I could say the more stress you have, the more magnesium you need. Yeah, that's true. But when you have this problem of cortisol, you're trying to down-regulate its expression. So that's where either the herb ashwagandha, sometimes holy basil works great. But ashwagandha, in some people, it is a godsend. It can be like a major game changer. But the body requires a certain amount of magnesium to make all this work. The other thing, and I know this sounds probably different if you haven't heard it before, every human being has a certain amount of a need for love and acceptance. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
And we're kind of raised in with all these different opinions, but if a person's or a woman's or a man's love needs are not met, they're going to have too much cortisol. And so there is a chemical that's produced in the hypothalamus of the brain. It's called oxytocin. Mm-hmm. Sometimes oxytocin is known as the love hormone. So the more that a person is touched properly, I just mean you get this physical touch, if you want to call it physical affection, that's fine too. But the human body is, it's got to have its needs satisfied by oxytocin. Now, I'm not telling you understand this, but oxytocin is incredible. It has this amazing ability to destroy cortisol on contact. I have no clue how it does that. I've got a bunch of ideas. I don't know if any of them are true or accurate, so I stand to be corrected on that. But if we do not get our needs for touching and hugging and kissing and physical contact, then you're going to have high cortisol. And cortisol is going to rip a person to shreds over time. I think I told a person the other day that I was reading a study about all these women that had experienced the absolute worst, most horrific abuse and stress on the planet, and they live an average of 17 years less than women that don't experience the stress. So you can't tell me that all this cortisol is just great for the human body. I mean, in spurts, yes. Mm-hmm. And so one of the simplest thing is just holding hands and hugging. I think one study that I read years ago demonstrated it takes somewhere between 25 and 30 seconds for the oxytocin to start flowing once you hug somebody. So if you tell somebody, hey, I need a hug, if they just kind of give you like a little quick hug and pat and they break it off, that ain't going to do it. But 30 seconds would. You see how hardcore I am on this stuff. I just don't let anybody out of it. So,
the magnesium, are you familiar with the product called Calm?
Yeah, and that potentially could work great.
Is it good or, I mean, is it the kind of magnesium that we can, because I take that, so I want to know if I'm doing the right thing.
Yes, and so that's definitely worth a try. So give it a shot, see what happens. But, you know, if I ask you a question right now, I'm going to put you on the spot. What is absolutely the most important mineral if a woman is concerned about the thickness of her bones? If she doesn't want osteoporosis, what is the most important mineral? It begins with the letter M. Would you care to guess?
Magnesium.
Bingo! But yeah, that's it. Yeah, magnesium is so much more critical for making the bones strong and hard. Mm-hmm. So even in America, every dentist is making a killing based on the lack of magnesium in the food because it makes the integrity of the tooth break down prematurely.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you got to have magnesium. So I know that most people try to be purists and say, I think I'll get everything from my food. Not going to happen. It's just not. Because we're living in such a stressful world. Do you know what the number one thing is that causes loss of magnesium, in my opinion?
Well,
overthinking. See, you don't know what it's like to lay down in bed at night and close your eyes, and all of a sudden you go, oh my goodness, why am I thinking about this conversation I had with my mother 5 years ago? Or why am I reliving this event from the past? That's called rumination or overthinking. You never do that, do you?
Yeah, you think.
I'm thinking you don't. No, but when we overthink and process, that has absolutely been shown to be the most stressful thing to a human body of all time. I know that sounds weird, but they have put monitors and done lab tests on people that were in very stressful situations. And out of all the potential things that could stress a human being out, like sitting in a school lecture about liberalism. That would be very stressful to me. Or being chased by tigers or lions. That doesn't even hold a candle to overthinking and stressing. Mm-hmm. Worry and stress and looping and overprocessing and ruminating on something, that generates more stress hormones than anything else on the planet does.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even have to really understand it, but if you recognize this, you go, okay, here's what I really want. I want to lay on my bed at night and put my head on the pillow and not endlessly process all night long. Especially things you can't change or control, right?
Right.
Okay. But yeah, every human being that's listening to this radio program, they need magnesium. So if nobody does anything else today but starts taking supplemental magnesium, then you're going to help yourself. And actually, you know what magnesium is? It's a vote that you love yourself and you want to help yourself.
Right. So you mentioned in the past, like when somebody has soreness in their hands, that it was the buildup of calcium, that lemon was good. But if you're already using the lemon in your water and rubbing lemon and so on, let me ask you, is there other factors like,
I know I'm going to make it sound like overly simple, but given a person's circumstances, the body can get into a, or can get to a place to where it's just exhausted and it can no longer heal. So a long time ago, Dr. Robert Fivecoat, who was my clinic supervisor back in the middle 80s, that sounds like a long time ago, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You probably everybody listening think, Dr. Morgan, he was born in like 1980. No. But anyway, Dr. Fivecoat would say, Roy, you got to remember this. It's very simple. If the body breaks down at a faster rate than what it can repair or heal, you're going to have symptoms of some kind, and those symptoms may be the hands hurt all the time, or the feet hurt, or you've got endless pains, or you're exhausted, or you can't sleep. But he would tell me that if your body can repair as quickly as something dies or breaks down, then you'll have no symptoms. That's called homeostasis or health. And I think I tend to agree with that equation, but I think just from my observations of just working with people day in, day out, I think the average person is just so worn down and so depleted and so exhausted. Their body is just stuck. It can't heal anymore. It's exhausted. And so you've got to create circumstances to help your body heal itself. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is just one simple idea. Have you ever heard of somebody saying, you know what? I am sick of this acid reflux. I hurt all the time. What am I going to do? Well, one of the old school remedies is like dirt cheap is just fasting for 3 days.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have to be a perfect water fast. Some people fast on, you know, they take a gallon of water and they put a can of frozen grape concentrate into it. And they might even add 1 teaspoon of Celtic or Celtic salt to it to kind of add this mineral base to it. Mm-hmm. And then they might put the juice of 2 or 3 lemons or limes into it to kind of add more life force and nutrition and electrolytes to it. Well, I dig all that stuff. But if you don't eat for like 3 days, you're telling your body, oh, I guess he's not going to feed us anything today. Maybe we should use our energy on healing and repairing. And a lot of times, one thing that fasting does, it removes all this deranged, damaged protein waste that gets built up in the cells. And when you're not processing food, your body goes, okay, I get it. We're not going to use our energy digesting and assimilating food. Why don't we clean house? Why don't we do some spring cleaning or summer cleaning as it is right now?
Sure.
So
wonderful.
Yeah, and so those are things. And so, I mean, this is a real deal. There's a reason why when people get sick, they don't want to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Your T lymphocytes release chemicals telling you, you need to go lie down, you need to get under the covers and just close your eyes and pass out. And the next thing you do is remember to sip water so you don't get dehydrated, but don't eat anything. If you don't eat, this is how your body heals.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm disgusted by the ads on the radio about eating a cheeseburger and French fries and a Coke while you're getting chemotherapy. I'm thinking, dude, you can't kill cancer and feed it at the same time. The same is true with infections. You can't feed the infections boatloads of sugar and then expect antibiotics to overcome the infection. That's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
But of course.
Very appreciate what you said.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you very much for your phone call. I wish you a great 4th of July.
Thank you. Same to you.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. If you'd like to join me on the radio, there's plenty of time left. Actually, 18 minutes to be exact and 55 seconds. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. You're listening to Health Essentials. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
Great, thank you.
I have a question. My husband is 9 weeks post-op triple bypass. What can I do to keep him from getting this again? What in my power?
Well, number one, you got to get his teeth fixed. If you have, and this is just my opinion, so you can take it with a grain of salt. If you have five arteries that feed and nourish the heart called coronary vessels, and three of them are completely clogged up, but two of them are perfectly open and clear, that makes me think that most likely one of the underlying causes is that the teeth have lost their integrity and there's cavities where toxic infections live and they're just spewing forth and going straight to the arteries. So going to the dentist could be like a great thing.
Okay.
The other thing is this. There's such a huge correlation between the food that we eat and healing in the integrity of the heart. And so let me give you an example. Years ago, I saw a man that had an ejection fraction at 9%. I don't know if you know what that means, but that means mm-hmm. very, very severe failure of the heart. Anyway, yeah. you already know all that. Guess what I recommended to him? I need you to start eating ribeye steaks with the bone, T-bone steaks. Eat salads. So basically just meat and vegetables. And what I had him do is specifically avoid every known source of sugar and grain from his diet. And so I know this sounds weird, but would you care to guess what the main source of fuel is for the heart itself? Well, its favorite thing is fat. It loves to eat fat. It thinks fat's delicious. Mm-hmm. If you give it its choice and said, would you like protein? Well, it needs a little bit of protein. Would you like carbohydrates? Well, it can eat carbohydrates if that's all you give it. But carbohydrates burn super dirty and fat does not. So with your husband, we might want to look into consuming butter, olive oil, avocados. Did I mention butter yet?
Yes.
Coconut oil, things like that. The ghee, all these things are good sources of fat. It's always disturbing when you find a man that has high cholesterol, like 275, and he's eating five eggs a day, and the doctor says, you can't do that. And he's going, well, I'm 110. I think that I can. I've outlived my last five doctors. But you've got to wrap your mind around, what do I do to create the circumstances for the heart to heal itself? Mm-hmm. And so I would say a diet based more on meat and vegetables. And then avoid, you know, the fake fats. Like, well, it's not fake, but they're artificially derived. Just because they can take corn and add gasoline to it as a solvent to get the corn oil out of it and reprocess it and reclaim it doesn't mean it's right.
Yeah.
But I would say cheese, butter, cream, avocados, you know, just any use of fat that you can. So if you wanted to saute onions, do it in butter or olive oil or coconut oil.
Well, that's basically what I do.
Good. Well, in a recent study, they tested men that had recent heart attacks against pomegranate juice. And I really can't remember if it was 2 ounces or 4 ounces of pomegranate juice, but you would agree with me, 2 ounces is like a drop in the bucket, right?
Yes.
But they showed that these men, while they were in the hospital recovering from a heart attack, the ones that had pomegranate juice, well, guess what happened? They healed 40% faster, and they were released from their hospital bed 4 days sooner compared to those that did not consume pomegranate. So, I mean, this is not like a big mystery here. There's things that God has made for us that's very, very good. Now, one thing I wish I'd mentioned a while ago, anytime that your husband can consume like a bone broth soup or fish head soup or eat fish, I think that is like its own separate unique category. It's so good for the heart. So,
I have him on fish, salmon and tuna.
Now, I need to make sure you're off Iron Shoe Bay in Alaska before you catch those. Is that where you were catching them, ma'am?
No.
Where do you catch them, Brookshire's?
Yes. Frozen seconds.
I'm joking.
He's on a beta blocker. He quit taking the statin.
And that kind of, well,
I know.
Obvious, but anyway, yeah, well, that's a whole. But the beta blocker, all it's doing is blocking adrenaline. It's just that most likely he's maybe just a little bit of a worrier. Could that be true? Okay, maybe.
Probably.
But anyway,
normal.
But that's all.
I would say normal.
That's all the beta blocker does is just it blocks adrenaline. And so he really does need magnesium. He probably needs to take probably cod liver oil or tuna fish oil, something like that. You gotta put those good fats if you want the heart to heal. I say resveratrol is an amazing substance. You can get resveratrol in a capsule form, or I mean from a plant-based form. It doesn't have to be from drinking red wine.
Yes. Okay.
So there's a time and a place for red wine. Sometimes it's just like the worst thing that a person could do because there's always a temptation to drink too much of it as a coping mechanism. Like if a person says, I drank 3 bottles of that, well, that's going to end in disaster. Of course, they know that. I'm not judging anybody. But resveratrol is one of the most exciting things that you could study today that would improve the health of the heart.
I had blood work done on him as a base about a month ago.
Good.
I can go from that.
If you can read it and understand it, yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Well, but then again, you know what you have at your fingertips? You have the internet.
True.
So you could easily, a sweet, sweet woman named Patty gave me a book about reading the blood by James Lavelle, and I've been going through it. She doesn't really know this, but I like to read. No, I'm just joking. Of course she knows that. But you know what? There's so many books that you can read to tell you about the blood. And so if he's got a situation, I would probably say, okay, does he either have some food that he's eating that's generating too much inflammation in the coronary arteries, or does he have out-and-out significant nutrient deficiencies like zinc, magnesium, vitamin K2, the B vitamins? All those are critical, but you know what? This ain't rocket science. We're living in America. America's probably pretty doggone famous for having the most nutrient depleted foods on the planet.
Well, to me, his lipid panels look good.
What do you mean?
His new test. When he went to the hospital, they were funky.
Right, but let me just say this. Nearly 70% of all men that have heart attacks and heart problems, their total cholesterol is 180 and below.
Yeah, his is 151 now.
Well, that's way, way, way too low. Anytime that your total cholesterol starts to hit below 140, that's when your liver is just shutting down. And so what we need is, I know this is a different concept, your husband needs healing life force and energy.
Mm-hmm.
Cholesterol is literally one of the greatest healing molecules produced in the human body. The only time it can ever be a problem is if it's oxidized. And so you want his HDL cholesterol to be around somewhere 60 or a little bit above that.
Well, pre-surgery it was like 39.
Right.
Now it's 56.
Okay, that's an improvement. But the number one thing that causes hardness of the arteries is going to be insulin. So whether it's infection or higher insulin or higher cortisol, all those things contribute in a very diabolical fashion towards hardening the arteries and making them more stiff. So when you're trying to make the arteries, everything's about the blood. The faster that blood moves through the body, the better that things go. That's where even potassium plays like a huge role. So eating one green salad a day can go a long way to meeting his mineral needs.
Okay.
What are the triglycerides?
64.
Okay, that's a great number. But personally, I would rather the cholesterol to be 270 than I would it to be 150.
Because doctors freak out.
Well, they can freak out all they want. I want your husband to live. And live a great, great life. Oh, I know that goes without saying. That's rhetorical. And I'm sorry, I wasn't trying to be flippant the way I said that. But the thing of it is, if you look at long-term studies, we could argue this point forwards and backwards. I'm really trying hard not to, because I don't want to come across that way as like, hey, everybody do what I say right now because I'm a genius when it comes to cholesterol. That's not the case at all. I don't know everything. I just know that cholesterol is one of the most valuable substances to repairing is. So if you lower the cholesterol and keep it low, that just means there's a whole bunch of repairs that aren't going to be made to the body.
Sure.
I know I'm just not making this up, but when somebody's age 75 and above, they live a heck of a lot longer if their total cholesterol is 275 as opposed to 150. I know that nobody's going to agree with me on that, but I don't care. I don't need anybody to agree with me. You know, that's what the truth is. The truth just needs to be able to stand alone on itself.
How do you get cholesterol up?
Well, number one, he can't make all the cholesterol that he needs. His liver is not that good. Nobody's is. You're going to have to get it from the food that you're eating. So,
eggs.
There you go. I think we're on the same page. And so,
eggs and liver.
Well, yes. And you know what? You could go to the butcher shop today and buy him some calf heart. And cook it and make a stew out of it. Now, don't tell him.
Yeah.
Here's the way you should do it. Sweetheart, do you find what I've made for you ultra delicious right now? And when he says to you, yes, my sweet, I do. And then you say, would thou carest to know with what is in it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell him it's calf heart. He may freak out.
Okay.
So everything the body needs is going to be found in the form of real food.
True.
No one's ever going to have great health by eating processed, you know, Nutrisystems, fake cardboard. It ain't going to happen. There's no vital. You got to have some food that's alive.
True. Well, he's doing good on his food. I mean, he has changed a lot.
Well, you know what? Here's what he's got. He's got a second chance on life, right?
True, yeah.
And that means God is very kind and patient and merciful by giving him another opportunity. So let's make the best of it.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Oh, yes. I wasn't suggesting that you weren't. But, yeah, you're a great wife. You're doing everything. But I would suggest also that he's got a lot of other things that are going to have to be managed and taken care of. You just can't do that on the radio. It can be done better in person. But you're moving in the right direction. And you gotta do what's right and be true to yourself. If all you do is you respond to the nurse or the doctor's jumping up and down screaming, your cholesterol is 110, it's too high. Well, okay.
Yeah.
You know what I find interesting?
What?
If I look at all the stats from, say, about 1970 up until now, let's just say that's 50 years, which it is, there really has been no significant improvement in heart disease. People are still having heart attacks, and they're still having procedures and surgeries. So either we're not doing something right, or we're missing something, but all these drugs and all these surgeries, they're probably not really doing a lot to change the course of American heart health. I wish they were, but they're not. So they can tell me all day long about how great the drugs are. Show me some proof in real numbers. That's why I mentioned resveratrol. Is because in Great Britain, you can just walk into a pharmacy and buy statin drugs over the counter anytime you want, which is probably the way it should be. So you don't even have to have a doctor breathing down your neck going, I hate your cholesterol, this is evil, take Rivastatin or Crestor. Well, you can just buy it over the counter in a pharmacy in Great Britain. And if you want it, then you can get it all day long. But it hasn't done anything to change the incidence of heart attacks or heart disease over in Great Britain. I mean, that's probably the biggest misconception or actually lie that I've heard told over the last 30 years. That if you take a statin, that somehow magically prevents plaque and clogged arteries. It does not. study after study shows it don't do jack to prevent your arteries from becoming clogged. But you know what? You know what the story that I hear every single day? My doctor is so worried about my heart arteries, he says they're going to become clogged up. I'm going, ma'am, there's no evidence. Why would they say something? It's not true like that. But they do. It's a narrative that's it's going to keep going. It's not going to die because I say so.
CoQ10.
Excellent.
How would that help him?
Well, if you took about 400 milligrams a day of ubiquinol, it would help improve the function of the mitochondria in his heart. And you know what? The basic equation for healing is this. The body says, oh, you want me to heal you, do you? And you go, yeah, I'd like a little heart action down here. Heal my heart. Okay, I'll do it. But I need something from you. Well, what is it? I need some energy. Mm-hmm. So you've got to have energy. It is the currency of the body. It's a universal equation. Without energy, the body can't heal. I mean, you know, it's just utterly devastating when a person's exhausted, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you can only have so much exhaustion, and you're going, why am I not healing? Well, that's the answer right there. So coenzyme Q10 or ubiquinol is something
good.
Oh, yeah, give him 400 milligrams a day.
Okay, I've had him on 100 in the morning, 100 in the evening, all up at...
Yeah, just double that.
Okay.
Now, if he starts chasing you around the house because he has too much energy, we're going to cut him off and make him an exhausted, tired man again. I'm joking. You know, I read not that long ago, they were trying about 1,100 milligrams of ubiquinol with people that had unresponsive Parkinson's disease and are getting good results. And I thought, wow, this is horrible. We're using a nutrient to heal the body without any toxic side effects. You know, I'm just sort of joking about that. But, yeah, they used high dose of ubiquinol or coenzyme Q10 to help people with very severe Parkinson's.
Well, his vitamin D was at 34 also, so I've got him on that. It's just like weird
what
things.
Why was it 34?
Again?
What was it, 34?
Vitamin D.
Oh, yeah, and that's like way too low.
I know, but it's supposed to be like, what, 60 to 80?
If it was 100, I'd be happy.
I can do that. I just keep up. I've got him on 4,000.
I think you should tell him, sweetheart, come out in the front yard without your shirt on, just wear shorts, and as soon as he walks out there, lock the door behind him and say, sweetheart, you're going to have to sunbathe for 25 minutes.
That was what I think on the blood work surprised me more than anything, was his D.
Well, that may surprise you, but I need you to think of it this way. The demands for vitamin D can be so great that you can be using it up as fast or faster than you're putting it in. Is that okay?
Uh-huh.
And so he's just going through his vitamin D. I mean, don't really concern yourself about being surprised. Uh-huh. That just means he's burning through his nutrients in an effort to try to heal and restore health.
True.
I mean, that happens with B vitamins all the time. And so one of the number one symptoms of a person with low B vitamins is they just wake up tired. I should say tired and cranky, but that wouldn't be a popular topic on a Saturday morning talking about crankiness. But if a person wakes up tired in the morning, that is a sure indication they're deficient in B vitamins. And you know what?
Okay.
Stress is real. And when we're overly stressed, we burn through our nutrition at a much faster rate than when we're calm and happy. That's one of the reasons why vacations are so important.
Well, I know the last 2 months have been very stressful.
Well, but you're trying to get your footing. You're trying to right the ship and turn it around, so you're doing great.
Yeah, we are. It's
and you know what?
Going uphill.
Well, it seems like it sometimes, but I'd rather push the rock uphill and have a challenge than have no challenge.
True.
I can't remember the name of that Greek king that had to push the rock up the hill every day.
Right.
It wasn't called Les Maximus, I don't think. But anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay. Well, I enjoyed talking to you very, very much. I think we're officially out of time.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.